Our subject today is the enigmatic holiday of Tu B'Av. And the reason we are speaking about Tu B'Av is because now finding ourselves in the 3 weeks, which are the saddest portion of the Jewish year, we have a sense that Tu B'Av being such a happy day, a day when the girls would go out and dance and shidduchim would be made, marriages would be arranged, following so closely on the heels of Tisha B'Av, must have some connection. But the connection is not obvious, and the nature of the day of Tisha B'Av and the nature of the day of Tu B'Av are very, very different. And our question today is the connection between Tisha B'Av and Tu B'Av, and we're going to find out that there's more than just a connection between Tisha B'Av and Tu B'Av. There's also a connection between Shiva Asar B'Tammuz, which starts at 3 weeks, and Yom Kippur, and Tisha B'Av, and Tu B'Av, and they all work together in a system. So we're starting out with a Mishnah. This is the last Mishnah in Tanis. The Mishnah in Tanis says like this. It's in Perek Dalid, the end of this whole section called Tanis. And it says like this. Amar Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel. Shimon ben Gamliel used to say, Lo hayu yamim tovim li Yisrael kechamisha asar ba'av ukeyom hakipurim. There were no happier days. There were no better days in the Jewish nation, in our life cycle, than the 15th of Av and Yom HaKippurim. Because those days had a particular custom, and they were very merry and very joyous. B'shebehen, on those 2 days, benot Yerushalayim yotzot, the daughters of Jerusalem would go out, bechle lavan, in white gowns, white clothing, she'ulin, always borrowed, nothing that was their own, shelo levayesh as misha einlo, so not to embarrass someone who didn't have something, so everybody wore someone else's. It was very egalitarian, very kind-hearted, and all of the daughters, to skip a little bit, the benos Yerushalayim would go out, and they would dance in the vineyards. There'd be music and dancing. Mehayom wrote, and what would they say? Bachor, young man, lift up your eyes and see, choose for yourself. But don't just look at beauty, look at the family, look at the qualities, look at the yichus of the person. Remember, sheker hachein vehevel hayofi, beauty is not everything. A God-fearing woman is the most, those qualities are in the end the most beautiful, the most desirable, so choose for yourself that. And then in their little appeal to the boys to look at more than just beauty, they would quote a pasuk from Shir HaShirim. And this pasuk is very enigmatic, and the explanation to it is even more enigmatic. In fact, this whole Mishnah is very complicated, and we'll try to decipher it. So they quoted a pasuk from Shir HaShirim that said, this is from Perek Gimel, in Shir HaShirim, Pasuk Yud Aleph, Tzena Ure'ena Benos Yerushalayim, go out and see, daughters of Jerusalem. B'melech Shlomo, King Shlomo, Ba'atara She'itra Lo Imo, the crown that his mother crowned him with, B'yom Chasunaso, on the day of his wedding, U'b'yom Simchas Libo, on the day of the rejoicing of his heart. Go see the crown that Shlomo HaMelech's mother crowned him with on 2 different days, the day he got married, the wedding day, and his day of rejoicing, which is another day. Now explains a little bit. What are these 2 days? B'yom Chasunaso, the day of his wedding, we're speaking about Matan Torah. So let's do this again. Go see the crown that Shlomo HaMelech's mother gave him on the day he got married, which really is doesn't mean the day he got married literally. It is meant to refer to, it's a mashal in a sense for Matan Torah. Question? How could you see the crown that Shlomo's mother gave him and then on the day of Matan Torah? What's the problem? He wasn't born yet. He was born like 400 years later. Okay? So that's a problem. And what does it mean, go see the crown his mother gave him on Yom Simchas Libo, the day that his heart rejoiced? That is a Binyan Beis HaMikdash. That is the Binyan of the Beis HaMikdash that will be built. So which Beis HaMikdash are we speaking about? Don't forget this was written in the year 200 after the Common Era. Which Beis HaMikdash are we talking about? In the future. Was Shlomo alive for that? Okay. So go see the crown that Shlomo's mother crowned him with on Matan Torah, which preceded his birth by hundreds of years, and the happiest day of his life, which is Binyan Bayis Shlishi Bimheira Biyameinu, the final Beis HaMikdash Bimheira Biyameinu. So obviously what this pasuk means is complicated. But let's put a few things together.
This pasuk
comes from Shir HaShirim. Tzenu Ure'ena, Benos Yerushalayim B'melech Shlomo Ba'atarash Itralo Imo, the crown his mother crowned him with, on the day of his wedding, on the day of his rejoicing. Now, the Chazal tell us that the day of his wedding is Matan Torah. That's not in Shir HaShirim. And the day of his rejoicing is the future Beis HaMikdash. Now, Chazal tell us more. Let's put this all together. There are two happy days, Tu B'Av and Yom HaKippurim. There are two days that Shlomo is crowned. One is Matan Torah, and one is Binyan Bayis Shlishi. Now these two days, Matan Torah and Binyan Bayis Shlishi, must have something to do with Tu B'Av and Yom Kippur. They're in the same Mishnah, right? And this pasuk is brought as a proof text that the happiest days were Tu B'Av and Yom Kippur. And then we say that that's when Shlomo was crowned on Matan Torah and Binyan Bayis Shlishi. Now we can make an association between Matan Torah and which day? Tu B'Av or Yom Kippur. We can make an association between Matan Torah and Yom Kippur, because Yom Kippur really is the Matan Torah of the second Luchos. HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Moshe to write for him the second, write himself the Luchos a second time after he broke the first ones, and it was Yom Kippur that Moshe appeared on Har Sinai a second time with the second Luchos, which he gave to Klal Yisrael, which they had till they went into Golos, which were in the Aron. And those Luchos and that acceptance of the Torah, which was not violated with the sin like the first time with the golden calf, was the real giving of the Torah that we still have. So if we call Yom Kippur, which is what the association that's being made here in the Mishnah, Yom Kippur is the day of Matan Torah. Binyan Bayis Shlishi, therefore, must be associated with Tu B'Av. And both of them are celebrated by marriages, shidduchim, dancing, men, women choosing each other, and all of that. Okay. Now, we're used to hearing that they did this on Tu B'Av, but we're not used to hearing that they did it on Yom Kippur, but they did. Yom Kippur was a whole different day. They only had services till midday, but they brought all the sacrifices. The Kohen, up until the midday, went into the Kodesh HaKadoshim with the red string around his ankle. If he did a proper kapara for himself, for his family, for the Jewish people, if they all did tshuva, the string would turn white, he would emerge, and the rest of the day was rejoicing. They didn't eat, but rejoicing, party, celebration, dancing, shidduchim. It was a very happy day. It was a day of forgiveness. Very different than the way we celebrate it now. Today we don't celebrate it as a sad day. It's just a serious day. Not sad. It's actually an incredible opportunity to achieve kapara. So it's not a sad day. It's a great privilege, but it's a serious day. In any case, what we're trying to do to start this whole analysis, well, how could Shlomo's mother crown him when he wasn't alive for Yom Kippur, when Moshe gave the second Luchos, and he doesn't seem, unless Tchias HaMeisim, we're talking about the third Beis HaMikdash, but it says she already crowned him, so what does that all mean? But we have to get back to a much earlier point, which is, if these two days are the happiest days, Tu B'Av and Yom Kippur, we have to go back to their origin. Why are they so important? Why are they so happy? Well, let's start with Yom Kippur. Moshe brought the second Luchos on Yom Kippur. Why did he need to bring the second Luchos? Because they broke the first. Why did he break the first? Because that was his reaction to Chet HaEgel, which was a violation of the first two Dibros. What day did Moshe break the Luchos because of Chet HaEgel? The 17th of Tammuz. The 17th of Tammuz, last Sunday, the beginning of the 3 weeks, which we generally think of as part of the loss of Eretz Yisrael. If you ask your normal person what happened on Shavuot, you know, regular educated Jew, what happened on Shavuot, they say, that's the beginning of the loss of Israel. They breached the walls, and then the city was vulnerable, and then the soldiers came in, and eventually they burned the temple. That's the beginning of the loss of Eretz Yisrael, but it's not true. What happened on Shavuot B'Tammuz is the Luchos were broken. In fact, the Mishnah, right slightly before this, tells you that five terrible tragedies happened on Shavasar Batamas, and you tell me if any of them have to do with the loss of Eretz Yisrael. Number one, Chamisha Devarim, Eru Avaseinu B'Shavasar Batamas. Five terrible tragedies happened on Shavasar Batamas. Okay, here they are. Nishtabru Haluchos. The Luchos were broken. That is not a loss of Israel, the land of Israel, our place. That is a loss of our connection to the revelation, to the Shechina that we saw in Har Sinai, to the mitzvahs we heard, to the commandments we heard. Breaking of the Luchos is a violation of the two Dibros. We heard ourselves the concept of a single God and the clarity, what that meant. Second of all, Karban Tamid that was offered for 1,000 years from the time of Har Sinai till the Korban came to an end. Now you might think that has something to do with the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, but it really isn't about the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. The fact that the Korban Tamid was batal on Shavasar Batamas is very important, because you have to understand what we read in Parshas Pinchas 2 weeks ago, 2 Shabbosos ago. The Korban Tamid that we offered every single day in the Beis HaMikdash, morning and afternoon, is called Olas HaTamid, the totally burnt offering of Tamid, daily, continuous, Ha'asuya Bahar Sinai. That's its official name. The Tamid that was given at Har Sinai. Which means that the first time they gave that burnt offering was on Har Sinai, and every single day till the Korban Beis HaMikdash. So, the fact that the Tamid came to an end doesn't really mean that Israel was destroyed. It means our connection, a mitzvah we had that linked us straight back to Sinai, that chain was severed. That's what it means. Like the loss of connection to experience we had at Sinai. By the way, the Mizbeach HaNechoshes, where on the outside of the building, where they offered the animals every single day, was a miniature Har Sinai. It was a mound of dirt surrounded by copper, filled with dirt like Har Sinai, with a continuous Esh Tamid burning on it. And that fire that burns on it is the same fire that came down on the mountain on Har Sinai, because that fire also descended from heaven onto the Mizbeach. And that was a miniature Har Sinai with the fire burning on it. And the Ola that they gave was continuous from Har Sinai. Every day the same thing. So when the Ola came to an end, that means our connection to Sinai was severed. The next thing that happened, it says, Huvka Ha'ir. It doesn't say, Partsu Chomot Ha'ir. They breached the walls of the city. That doesn't say that on the Mishnah. It says the city was Huvka. Where do we get that Shorash Boka? Bokea. Bokea. Split in half. Very important. It's not talking about the breaching of the walls. It's talking about the city, which was unified, was split in half. What do we know about Har Sinai? About unity. Ish echad b'lev echad, they stood as one, unified around the mountain. The nation was unified. When they set up the Beis HaMikdash in Yerushalayim, they did the same thing. They created harmony by a number of ways. Number one, no business conducted in the city. There should be no arguments, no negotiations, no harsh words. No business conducted in the actual city of Yerushalayim around the Beis HaMikdash. They had a wall around the Beis HaMikdash, as you know, and around the city. When they say the city was split, it was the first time since Har Sinai that Klal Yisrael found themselves split. And the nation ran. Half were here, half were there. We were always together. There was no dispersion. For the first time, all of a sudden, people were split. They weren't all in the same place at the same time, centralized. That's what the Mishnah means, where the city was split, not the walls were breached. And then, of course, the next two are clearly a loss of connection to Har Sinai. Apostomus, the Greek, burned a Sefer Torah. And Menashe put a Tselem, violation of the first two Dibros, an image in the Beis HaMikdash, a statue. That's a violation of the first two. Everything that happened in Shavasar Batamas, starting with the breaking of the Luchos, is a breaching, really, a ripping apart, a severing of us to our memories, our connection to Har Sinai. That's Shavasar Batamas, that's Chet HaEgel, that's the breaking of the Luchos. What is Yom Kippur? The happiest day, the day of Shaduchim. It's clearly when Moshe brought the second Luchos and the Anan Yakovel came back and the Shekhinah came back down, when Hashem said, build me a Mishkan v'shachanti b'socham, and I'll dwell with you, because after the Chet HaEgel, Hashem departed. So now Moshe gave them the second Luchos, the clouds came back, which is why we celebrate Sukkot after Yom Kippur, not after Pesach, according to the Gra. And the Shekhinah comes down back among them. They build the Mishkan, they start the Karbanos. So Yom Kippur is clearly the tikkun on the breaking of the Luchos, the breach with Sinai, the loss of the Shekhinah, Shavasar Batamas. You have to see Shavasar Batamas and Yom Kippur as two bookends. Shavuot Shabbatam starts our disconnection from Sinai, breaking Luchos, loss of Shechina. Yom Kippur restores it. So it becomes a very, very happy day. The Anani HaKavod come back, as we said. The Shechina returns into the Mishkan. Hashem can speak to Moshe from between the Aron, the Kruvim, where we were able to rebuild what we lost, what we had at Sinai, and what we almost lost. Okay, so if Yom Kippur is the tikkun on Shavuot Shabbatam, as everybody sees that, that's clear. So Tu B'Av is also a very happy day. It's also a tikkun day. So what was the other great sin in the Midbar? We had Cheder Egel, loss of Shechina, Har Sinai, Torah, clarity, vision, level of prophecy that we had, clarity of Hashem's presence, our commitment to the Torah and the mitzvos. We lost, there was a breach there. What was the other great sin in the Midbar? Chet HaMeraglim. And that's clearly the loss of Eretz Yisrael, obviously. Now, when did that take place? That took place on, of course, Tisha B'Av. The Meraglim came back. Everybody started crying. It's in, we can't go there. It's overwhelming. They're going to destroy us. We can't survive. It's all, we don't have the wherewithal. They all start crying with self-pity, which is, by the way, a very satisfying feeling to have a lot of self-pity. People indulge in it often. Self-pity. We can't do it. We're doomed. And they cry, and Hashem says, this night is going to be Tisha B'Av. Okay. So Tisha B'Av is our loss of Eretz Yisrael. That's clear. Now we begin to see that Shavuot Shabbatam and Tisha B'Av have a very deeper connection than we thought. It's not just the beginning of the Chorban and the end of the Chorban. It's a different dynamic. It's our loss of connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the Shechina among us and our commitment to Torah, which then leads us to lose Eretz Yisrael. Because it's look at our recent history. If we don't have a commitment to the Torah and the mitzvahs, there is no way we're going to be committed to Eretz Yisrael. And that's why the secular elite in Israel today, who are not committed to Torah and mitzvahs, have no idea why the heck they're surrounded, why they have to live in this little country that's surrounded by 500 million Arabs with all the oil in the world, and there are 5 million people. And obviously, the formula is very clear. 5 million people with no oil and no money, who are universally hated, are not going to prevail over 500 million people with oil. Like, give up. Why are we fighting? The whole thing makes no sense. Just leave. And that's exactly what they would like to do. And therefore, there's no will. And they don't know what they're fighting for. They don't know why they're fighting for this country, because they don't see the point of being there anyway. So if we don't have Torah and mitzvahs, we can't hold on to Eretz Yisrael. They go together. And of course, we know more mystically, spiritually, if we start slipping and we start violating Torah and mitzvahs, Hashem will take the land away from us. The land will spit us out. We will not deserve the privilege of living there. Hashem will destroy our Beis HaMikdash, send us into Golus, as a way of teaching us, you can't have my land and my protection and this life without mitzvahs. It's a package deal. So Shavuot Shabbatam is the loss of commitment to Torah. And then that leads to Tisha B'Av, which is the loss of the land. That's how it works. They're not both just two, you know, the beginning and the end of the loss of the land. So if Chet HaMeraglim, let's put the whole chart in order. Chet HaEgel, loss of connection to Torah, loss of connection to Har Sinai, which takes place in Shavuot Shabbatam, Tikkun Yom Kippur, new Luchos, new Shechina among us, Chet HaMeraglim, Tisha B'Av, loss of connection to Eretz Yisrael as a result of Chet HaEgel, obviously. Okay? Loss of connection to Eretz Yisrael. Tikkun is going to be Tu B'Av. Now, how come Tu B'Av is a Tikkun for Tisha B'Av? How does that work? Well, Tu B'Av is a yontiv that was always celebrated with the dancing. Now, the way they said, they celebrated it with singing and dancing and shidduchim, not because it was in their years, in all those years of the first and second Beis HaMikdash. It was a yontiv more than that. That was the nature of the yontiv, but because it was a portent for the future. There will be a time in the future that Tu B'Av will be a day that will make all that singing and dancing in Shidduch make sense. Now, what happened on Tu B'Av? A couple of things. Actually, even in the Midbar, something happened on Tu B'Av. Tu B'Av, of the 40th year, they stopped dying. What would happen was each year on Tisha B'Av, they'd all dig graves, as what Chazal tell us, and go in them, because there was a decree. All the, you know, the bulk of the nation was going to die. So they would dig graves, go in them, and some would come out in the morning, some wouldn't. And every year they do this. The last year, the 40th year, they dug their graves on Tisha B'Av. They went in, they came out. They went back in the next day, came out. They did this for 7 days till Tu B'Av. They said, that's it. The Gzeira must be over. No one's dying. And that's when they knew that that whole door that was left standing would enter Eretz Yisrael. So Tu B'Av has a precedent of the day that the punishment of Tisha B'Av was over. However, there is a pasuk in Emor that hints to us about the future nature of Tu B'Av. Now, this is my grandfather Sefer, Mayan Beis HaShoeva of Schwab, and it's one of the... Well, Sefer is filled with gems, and this is one of them. In Parshas Emor, there is a... We read it on Yom Tovim, a whole section about the Moedim. Okay? So, it starts with Pesach. Then, the next few pesukim tell us that the day after Pesach, you start counting 50 days as a whole mitzvah of Sfiras HaOmer. And on the 50th day, you bring a new offering, shtei lechem, two loaves of bread, and it's called Shavuos, Shavuos Sechem. So it goes from Pesach, Sfiras HaOmer, Shavuos. Completes the discussion of Shavuos. What's the next yontif? After Shavuos, the next Torah yontif? Well, you're thinking we're Golem, but Rosh Hashanah. But, yes, and guess what? Almost the next pasuk is Rosh Hashanah, but before the pasuk about Rosh Hashanah, which is B'chodesh HaShavi, on the seventh month, B'echad L'chodesh, on the first day, Yelachem Shabbason, will be a Shabbos, Zichron Trua, that's Rosh Hashanah. Zichron Trua. But before it goes into the pasuk on Rosh Hashanah, there's a random halacha dropped in between Shavuos and Rosh Hashanah, a random halacha, one pasuk, just plopped in the middle of the safe section of the Moedim. And everybody asks why. It obviously has a reason. This is the pasuk. Pasuk Chaf Gimel, Perek Chaf Gimel, Pasuk Chaf Beis in Emor. Here's the random halacha. Ubiketzirchem es ketzir artzachem. When you harvest the harvest of your land, you should not completely harvest the corner, right? So don't completely harvest the corner. You know about the halachas of leket shikham peya, which means the corner, the part you forget that falls behind, the part you forget and the part that drops out that you don't go back and pick them up. You leave it for the poor. La'ani ulager tazovotam, leave them for the poor and the foreigner. Ani Hashem Elokechem. That's a random halacha stuck in between Shavuos and Rosh Hashanah. So Rashi, bringing the words of the Chazal before him, of the Medrash, says, Amar Rav Abdimi, Rabbi Yossi, why did the Pasuk, the Kasuk, the Torah, see fit to put this random halacha here? So he says like this, and usually as these Chazals go, the answer doesn't clarify anything, actually. Makes things more confusing. He said, to teach you that whoever keeps the mitzvah of leket shikhan peya kara'oi, which means according to their, what's appropriate for their status, because there was no minimum quantity or maximum quantity. You could leave a tiny corner or a huge corner, as long as it was a corner. Now, Chazal later instituted certain guidelines, but lahalacha, according to the Torah, was whatever you wanted. So if you were very rich, you could leave a huge corner and a tremendous amount of stuff on the ground. But if you were poor, you could leave minimum. So the Medrash says here, whoever teaches you that whoever gives leket shikhan peya la'ani to the poor person, karaoi, according to their, you know, proper measure, according to their situation in life, it's considered like he built a base of Migdash and brought karbanos within it. Well, that's very nice. If you keep leket shikhan peya, it's like you built a base of Migdash and brought karbanos. But does that, for any of you, answer why it's between Shavuos and Rosh Hashanah? It's very nice that the mitzvahs like building the base of Mikdash, but what does it have to do with Shavuos on this side and Rosh Hashanah on the other side? So many answers. My grandfather suggests an answer. He says, beautifully, this pasuk is a hint, because it's in the section of the Moedim. It is a hint to a future Moed, which will fall directly between Shavuos and Rosh Hashanah. But the Torah cannot openly tell you the laws of that holiday because it doesn't exist yet. It hasn't happened yet. But it will happen. Now, which yantar is destined to be added to our calendar between Shavuos in the summer, Rosh Hashanah in the fall, hand is hinted to by the mitzvahs of Leket Shikhen Peah. Which Yantiv? Well, some might say Tisha B'Av, and some might say Tu B'Av. Now, why would you say Tisha B'Av? Because we have a tradition that the third base of Midrash will come down on Tisha B'Av. That's true. Now, let's stop here for a minute before we get to Tu B'Av. How does this random halacha hint to the future Yantav of Tisha B'Av? Leket Shikhan Peah, that has to ring a bell. It has something to do with the Beis HaMikdash, with the future Beis HaMikdash. Huh? Yes, but what is the halacha of Leket Shikhan Peah have to do, like Rashi says, it's like you built the Beis HaMikdash, and it's a hint to the future Yantav of the Binyan Bayis Shlishi, the third temple. Who is going to be in charge of bringing the third Beis HaMikdash? Mashiach. Mashiach comes from David. David comes from Rus. Now you know. How was Rus found by Boaz? Because he did Leket Shikhan Peah Karaoi. The story of Rus is very simple. She needed food. So she said to Naomi, I'm going to go try to find food in the fields. She didn't know where to go. She had never been in Israel before. You know, farmland, little paths and fields here and fields there. She didn't know where to go. So she went to the crossroads. Look in Megillas Rus, you'll see it. Straight out on the Psukim. She went to the crossroads. She stood there. She waited for people to come, and then she said, where are you going? And they said, oh, we're all going to Boaz, because he leaves so much that, you know, it's one-stop shopping. You don't have to go anywhere else. So because Boaz was generous, like Rashi says, did Leket Shikhan Peah Karaoi, according to his wherewithal, he was a very rich man, that's what brought him Rus. That's how she ended up there. Because he noticed Rus, the whole story, then Rus came home and told Naomi that she ended up in Boaz's field, and then Naomi concocted that whole plan, which worked out, and it led to David HaMelech, which is the great-grandfather of Mashiach, who will build the third base of Megiddosh. So this mitzvah of Leket Shikhan Peah, kept properly by Boaz, is like that he built the Beis HaMikdash. Exactly. That's what he did. By that mitzvah led to the building of the Beis HaMikdash, and it led to the future Beis HaMikdash. So this pasuk is a hint that Rashi's not even telling you. Rashi's not spilling the beans. He's just telling you, Leket Shikhan Peah, it's like you built the Beis HaMikdash. It's related to David. It's related... Eventually, it's back to Rus. It is the way that we get the Beis HaMikdash. So that pasuk is a hint to the future Moed between Shavuot and Rosh Hashanah. Now, many said Tisha B'Av. That's true. We have a tradition that Tisha B'Av, the Beis HaMikdash, will be built. However, as soon as the Mishkan, or the Beis HaMikdash, we had one Mishkan and two Batei Mikdash. As soon as they're erected, they're not used automatically. What happens first? There's always 7 days of dedication. Chanukah HaMizbeach. The seventh day after they dedicate all the kelim and they initiate them, then the Beis HaMikdash starts to be actually used. The seventh day after its building is the day of the Chanukah HaMizbeach, when the Mizbeach is initiated for first use. What is 7 days after Tisha B'Av? Tu B'Av. Now Rashi says, if you keep Leket Shikhan Peah, into Rus. It's like you built the Beis HaMikdash and you brought Karbanos. He's talking about not Tisha B'Av, Tu B'Av. Because Tu B'Av is when you bring the Karbanos, 7 days later. You don't start at the first 7 days. Rashi is making a hint to Tu B'Av here. But he won't tell you because the Torah won't tell you. He's not going to tell you either. But this is a remez stuck in here to the future Yantav of Tu B'Av, when the Beis HaMikdash will be initiated and in full use by Jews and non-Jews. So
is it in fact Tu B'Av, not Tisha B'Av?
Tu B'Av is the Chanukah HaMizbeach. The Tisha B'Av will be built. That's our tradition. And Tu B'Av, it will start being used. It will start being used. Now, Tu B'Av, therefore, is the Tikkun on Chet HaMeraglim. When we lost Eretz Yisrael, when we lost the Beis HaMikdash, when we were, that's Tisha B'Av. Chet HaMeraglim, Tisha B'Av, destruction of the temple twice, expulsion from Spain, lots of terrible tragedies, lots of tragedies over the years. The fall of Beitar, city being plowed by the Romans with salt. Many things happen on Tisha B'Av. Tikkun, when we get back to Beis HaMikdash, which means we get back Eretz Yisrael. Tuba. So now we go back to the Mishnah. There were no happier days in Israel than Yom Kippur, which we now we know is a tikkun on Chet HaEgel, a tikkun on Shavasar B'Tamuz, and Tuba, which was a tikkun on Chet HaMeraglim, a tikkun on Tisha B'Av. Is that clear so far to everybody? Now we have a couple questions. Why was it celebrated by Shaduchim, girls dancing? And what does it mean that that's the days, Matan Torah and Binyan Bayis Shlishi, that Shlomo's mother crowned him when he wasn't alive for either of them? What does that mean? So, let's talk about the Shaduchim first. Why are these 2 days celebrated by marriages? Well, if the Chet HaEgel, Hashem Shechina, departed, and Moshe broke the Luchos, well, if Har Sinai was like a marriage, and the Luchos were like a ksuva, it was basically a kind of almost divorce, and departing of the spirit, you know, Hashem left. And the Beis HaMikdash, that's breaking the house. So the marriage is over and you're kicked out of your marital home. So when you get the second Luchos, you rewrite the Ksuva and you welcome back into your marital home. It's a reunion. So it's celebrated, it's renewing the vows, so to speak. Celebrated by Shaduchim. There's no more appropriate day than to celebrate it, no appropriate way than to celebrate it by marriages, because that's exactly what's happening. It's a reunion between Hashem and Klal Yisrael, putting the ring back on our finger, rewriting the Ksuva, coming back into the home, the Shechina dwelling among us. That's what it is. So it's clear that that's why it's celebrated with marriages. Now, what about the most enigmatic part, Shlomo and all that? Well, in order to understand the code words of Shlomo HaMelech himself in Shir HaShirim, and you know Shir HaShirim is so... is written in such mysterious code, riddle form, poetic form. It's never meant to be taken literally. Chazal actually wanted to ban Shir HaShirim and not include it in Tanakh because it could be so easily misread as a love story. And yet, if you read a pasuk like this, you know he's making allusions. It's all remez, it's all hints. There was no Shlomo at Matan Torah. There was no Shlomo in Binyan Bayis Shlishi. But he's not saying that. So you've got to be able to read Shir HaShirim, every pasuk, with a concept of this is Kodesh Kedoshim, and everything's a hint and an illusion, and nothing's pshat. That's very important. So we have a rule. Rashi tells us that Shir HaShirim talks about Shlomo and HaMelech Shlomo. The first time that the word Shlomo appears in the very first chapter of Shir HaShirim, and the first time the phrase HaMelech Shlomo appears, Rashi tells you straight out, this is a rule. You can only read Shir HaShirim knowing this rule. When it says Shlomo, it's talking about Shlomo, the author, who lived, the son of King David. When it says HaMelech Shlomo, it's talking about Hashem. And Rashi tells you from the Chazal, from the Torah Shebal Peh, HaMelech Shahashalom Shelo, the king, that peace is his. Not Shlomo Solomon. HaMelech Shlomo is God himself. That's the rule. HaMelech Shlomo. HaMelech Shahashalom Shelo. The peace is now. All right, let's reread it. Let's Senehu Re'ena go out and see daughters of Sion. B'melech Shlomo. Who are we talking about? Hashem. Go see Hashem. Now this gets even worse. In the crown that his mother crowned him with on his wedding, which is Matan Torah, Yom Kippur, second Luchos, and the happiest day, which is the third Beis HaMikdash, should be built in. Who's Hashem's mother? And what's the crown she crowned him with on Yom Kippur and Tu B'Av? That's really what it's saying. Hashem has a mother. Now, the Christians didn't get all their crazy ideas for nothing. Okay? We have in our tradition these type of references, God's mother. In fact, in our last week's Parsha, Matos, there's something that was distorted and became an important Christian ritual. And we don't like to think of it starting from us, but it has its origins in us. It's just way distorted. For example, you know about the Eucharist? Okay. So they bow, they kneel at the altar, and they get a wafer, which is his body, and they get wine, which is his blood. Okay, they're ingesting God into them. Now, if you look in Parshas Matos, the halachas of karbanos, the mizbeach consumes the flesh of the korban, and the blood is dashed on the corners of the Mizbeach. So we also realize that when we give a carbon to Hashem, we consume the flesh and the blood are both part of the offering. However, the difference is we are dedicating our life spirit as symbolized by flesh and blood to God, whereas they are trying to imbibe God's physical flesh and blood into their bodies as if they can make God human and physical and contained in this world. It's two totally different perspectives. But do we have an emphasis on the flesh and the blood of the sacrifice? Yes. So they do too. They call him the sacrifice. It's just they do it in a whole distorted way, which we consider repulsive and total heresy and blasphemy and falsehood. Something make God human and think you can partake of God's... I mean, the whole thing is repulsive to us. Sounds very Roman, very pagan, which it is. But things are get distorted, but they have like points of connection. So here we speak about God's mother that is crowning him. Okay. So in order to understand what that means, Hashem has a mother, so here we go into another Gemara that explains it. So here's the Gemara. So Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai asked Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Yossi, perhaps you heard from your father what the meaning of this pasuk is, the crown that his mother crowned him with. Like, do you have any derech in understanding this? Tell me. Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai asked, right? So Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Yossi said, yes. He said, this is a mashal. Okay. The mashal is a king who had one daughter, and he loved her so much he couldn't find a way to express his love for her until he called her my daughter. And he quotes a pasuk from Tehillim, listen, my daughter, and see. Shimi, BT, you have to be here. Shimi, bas, uri, listen, my daughter, and see. Quotes a pasuk from Tehillim where he calls Klal Yisrael my daughter. Says, but he loves her so much that he couldn't find a way of expressing himself until he called her my sister. As it says, Pischi li achosi rayosi in Shir Hashirim, a couple chapters later, from here, open for me my sister, my beloved, and achosi rayosi is like sister, which is also kind of interchangeable with wife, like Avram called Sarah my sister, rayosi my beloved, so sister wife is kind of equivalent. And then he still had so much love for her, he couldn't figure out how to express himself until, like it says in Yeshayahu, he called her my mother. As it says in Yeshayahu, Hakshivu Eli Ami Ulaumi, listen to me, my nation, my people. Eli Ha'azinu, listen to me. And Laumi, is it written, but don't read it Laumi, my nation, read it Le'imi. That's from Yeshayahu, my mother. So, Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Yossi says, yes, my father told me that there are three ways Hashem refers to Klal Yisrael. My daughter, my sister slash wife, and my mother. As it says in Yeshayahu, listen to me, my nation, don't read it Laumi, read it Le'imi, my mother. So, what did Rav Shimon bar Yochai do when he heard this? He stood up, and he kissed him on his head, and he said, if I had only come into this world to learn this, it would have been enough. So, obviously, Rabbi Elazar ben Rav Yossi is teaching him something fundamental, and it's all hidden in this mashal of a king who says, I love my nation so much, my daughter, call them my daughter, my wife slash sister, my mother. So our job now is to understand the pasuk in Shir Hashirim, which is incomprehensible, explained by the Gemara, which itself isn't really explained. So now it becomes our job to try to decipher what's going on here. So, the Meshech Chachma gives a glimpse into what this is saying, and basically, with this idea, we get a broad view of Jewish history. The Jewish people and HaKadosh Baruch Hu have a very long history. And if you want, you can think about it in terms of a child from its infancy, youth, adolescence, young adulthood, maturity, old age. We have gone through a long process as Jews. And the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu relates to us is different based on our maturity and our development. The first portion of Jewish history, we are considered Hashem's daughter, Hashem's little child. Now, how does a parent relate to a daughter, a little child? It's always in the feminine, Kleister, my daughter, but a child. So the job of a parent is to introduce the child to the realities of the world, to teach them what this world is all about. How do you get through this world successfully? What do you need to do? What do you need to avoid? How do you live? What to watch out for? What your parent wants from you? What you're expected to do? What you're not expected to do? Instructions, setting the child up for life. So the first 1,000 years of Jewish history, which means from Yetzias Mitzrayim until the Churban Bayis Rishon, the entire era of prophecy, open miracles, Beis HaMikdash with the Kohen, with the Urim Tumim, they could speak to Hashem. Okay, all open miracles, God's presence among us, Nevi'im. That entire era was the era of my daughter. Hashem was teaching. Hashem was instructing. Hashem was guiding. How much more could HaKadosh Baruch Hu do? He spoke to us directly. He gave us prophecy. He taught us through endless Nisim, huge Nisim in the time of Moshe and smaller Nisim in the time of the prophets and the kings. He was teaching what's right, what's wrong, what to do, what not to do, what I like, what I don't like. Instruction for 1,000 years. That was when we were my daughter. But you're not expected to be a little child forever, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu does everything for you. Like in Mitzrayim, we sat in our huts and Hashem fought our battle and killed all the Egyptians. Eventually, there's maturity. Eventually, the parent gives responsibility to the child, lets them go off on their own, and expects them to live up to everything the parent has been pouring into them for so many years. So we move into the phase which is my sister, my wife. Now, my sister, my wife is already, you can see, equivalent, partners. My sister is a partner. My wife is a partner. It's not below me, it's not above me, it's an equal. The era of my sister, my wife, is the Second Temple era, because that was an interesting transitional era. On the one hand, we were in Eretz Yisrael, we did have a Beis HaMikdash, okay? We did have Kohanim, but we didn't have the Luchos and the Aron. We didn't have open miracles. We did not have prophecy. But we had a Beis HaMikdash. We had Kohanim. We had Karbanos. And there were even miracles. Hidden miracles. Even open miracles. For example, we always think of that there's no more open miracles after Purim, right? Purim was a hidden miracle because there's no more open miracles. We're in a time of Hester Panim. That's a traditional concept. But what about the oil burning on the menorah? Was that a hidden miracle or an open miracle? It's an open miracle. So how could that happen in the era, the time frame of hidden miracles, where God is already more hard to see? So the answer is, my grandfather explains this, make no mistake about it, the burning of the oil on the menorah was an open miracle in a hidden place where only the Kohanim saw it. Only the Jews knew about it. In other words, that miracle told us, I'm with you, I'm watching you, I'm behind you, but it's not like it was in the first 1,000 years. I'm not going to break open the heavens and scare the daylights out of all the nations of the world. You're going to have to do what you did on Hanukkah. Get up, on your own, sacrifice, fight for what's right, for what's true, for the mitzvahs, for the Torah, for your identity as Jews. You'll die. It's not going to be like you were in Mitzrayim with you all sat in your huts and all the Egyptians died around you. You're going to have to put in the effort. You're going to have to stand up for that I'm the only God, that the Torah is true and permanent, that the mitzvahs are not changed, can't be discarded. You have to do it, and you're going to have to take some blows for it. But you should know that I'm with you. The oil is burning. But you know what? You're in a transitional phase. You can't stand up and say to the world, God is going to fight for me. You're not going to be able to prove to the world, look, God is on my side. You'll know it, and you have to carry it with you and have the confidence. But you know what? You're going to have to do for me. You're going to have to speak on my behalf, even if it costs you. That was a transitional phase of the Second Temple era. By the way, that's why the halacha in Eretz Yisrael, the proper halacha, we don't do it here, you don't have to do it here. It's not even recommended necessarily to do it here. In Eretz Yisrael, the mezuzah is on the right, and on Hanukkah, the menorah is on the left. Because those are two bookends. Mezuzah is the beginning of Jewish history when we were children, infants, and Hashem fought for us, blood on the doorway, we sat inside, the Egyptians dying outside, we did nothing. Menorah is the other end. We get out there, we fight, we take losses. But it's not because God has abandoned us, and that's why we have to do it on our own. Hashem is with us, but He's giving us the authority, responsibility to speak for Him, for what we believe in. Now, Hanukkah was the gateway to the Gullus, the last 2,000 years. That was it. Now we're in the last phase. So what's the last phase? Has Hashem totally abandoned us? We've got no Beis HaMikdash, no sovereignty really in Israel, if not for the grace of America and all that. Okay? There's a mosque on our Temple Mount. All right? We have no open miracles. We have no Aron. We have no Kalim. We have no Kohanim. No prophecy. What does it mean? Has God completely abandoned us? He doesn't want us anymore? Well, you know what? You can make a good argument that that's what it means. In fact, that's what all the Christians tell us. You've been rejected. God hates you. You had a Holocaust. How much more do you need till it dawns on you that He doesn't want you anymore? But we don't buy that. Because despite all of that, we are here. And there's more yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael than there was in the time of the second Beis HaMikdash. And our institutions today of learning are bigger than the biggest institutions in Bavel at their heydays. So we have more Torah. We're producing, we're doing more mitzvahs. The Jewish people are coming back. What does that mean? So Hashem hasn't rejected us. So what's happening in this last phase of Jewish history? This is the phase where Kadosh Baruch Hu says, you play the role of the mother. You play the role of the mother. Do you know what the role of the mother is? Teaching the world. Teaching the next generation. Teaching, well, who is Hashem? Who is our God? What does He want from us? What are the mitzvahs? They're still valid. The source of knowledge of Hashem and recognition of Hashem in this world comes from us. In our infancy stage, it came from God. He broke open the heavens. He did big miracles. That was the first 1,000 years. We were the daughter. Then there was the wife, sister. Hashem still did miracles. Rabin Biad Ma'atim still made it obvious that Hashem was among us. We still had a Beis HaMikdash. We still had sovereignty. Now Hashem says, I recede into the background and you do everything. You fight for the fact and die for the fact that there's one God and the mitzvahs are valid and you can't live without the Torah and you're going to build your yeshivas after a Holocaust, you're going to build your hospitals after a Holocaust, you're going to raise from kids after a Holocaust, and you're going to live in Israel even though they're trying to destroy you and they keep wars and bombings and endless service, and you're going to still go back there. The core. You're going to bring Hashem's presence, awareness, into this world, yourself, grassroots. You're the mother that has a full on her shoulders to teach the child everything. Now, when the mother is successful, as the core of Klal Yisrael is today, I mean, unfortunately, many don't have the stamina, many don't have the patience, and they abandon their people. We're losing a lot of people, but the core is strong, no question about it. And the core of Klal Yisrael is acting like Hashem's mother. We are speaking on behalf of God. We are bringing the awareness of Hashem into this world. What does it mean we're crowning Hashem? Well, to crown Hashem is just an image to get in your head. It's an allegory, it's a mashal. What does it mean to crown a king? Very simple. When people crown a king, all they're doing is bringing the recognition of the sovereignty of the king to the world. They're making it clear that this king is the ruler. That's all it means to crown a king. So now, when the mother, Klal Yisrael, at the end of history, brings the recognition of Hashem into this world through all kinds of ways, that's called crowning Hashem, making it clear that Hashem is the king, deferring to the king, living according to what the king wants, submitting to the king. That's called crowning the king. That's all it means. So now, go out and see. We're talking about our generation in Shir HaShirim. Daughters of Jerusalem, go and see the crown that Hashem's mother crowns him with. Go see the crown that Klal Yisrael is crowning God with, bringing the recognition of God to this world, which is called crowning him. Go see how Klal Yisrael are bringing Hashem's the awareness of God to this world through the effort they make, through the Torah they keep coming back to, the mitzvahs they keep doing, building Eretz Yisrael, all that stuff. Balei Tshuva, all that. Go see how they are bringing the awareness of Hashem back to this world, crowning Him. And you know what will be the final proof that we succeeded in crowning Hashem? Now we're going to get back Eretz Yisrael, Beis HaMikdash, Tuva Av, and we're going to get back our connection to Torah. We're going to get back our prophets. We're going to get back our Nisim. We're going to get back the Beis HaMikdash. Though that will happen, and you know whose efforts it will happen by? Our efforts. Hashem's not going to sit down and do it for us. That was a long time ago when we were babies. Now it comes from us. So they say there are two happiest days. You know what the future two happiest days will be? The future day of Binyan by Shlishi. And you know why it'll be so happy? Because we know we did it. We earned it. That we crown the Kadosh Baruch Hu and we celebrate it by marriages because it's a reunion between us and the Kadosh Baruch Hu. And when we get back Eretz Yisrael, that comes hand in hand with a closer connection to Torah, obviously. In fact, it's the opposite. When we build Torah, we earn back Eretz Yisrael. For example, Shuvu Rav Pam, he was so dedicated to the cause of being Makarov the young Russian Olim. He said, you know, we're on the march, we're moving forward, we're bringing Torah back to Eretz Yisrael. That's our job. And then we know HaKadosh Baruch Hu brings us back the Beis HaMikdash. And those will be the two happiest days. Yom Kippur, which is the Luchos, be giving the second Luchos, which means to us a reconnection to Torah, strong connection to Torah and as much of the people as possible, the Balei Tshuva, the children, all of that. And then a return of Eretz Yisrael, the Beis HaMikdash. Those are the happiest days. And who will be the catalyst to crown Hashem, in the sense, to bring Hashem back to Tzion, to throne Hashem on His throne once more in Yerushalayim? The mother, Klal Yisrael, at the end of days. So now, hopefully, we made a little sense out of this Mishnah in Tanis. There were no happier days than Tuva, which is the Tikkun, on Tisha B'Av, the Chorban, Yom Kippur, which is the Tikkun, on Shavuot Batamos, Chei HaEgel, both celebrated with marriages, both destined to be great Yom Tovim, one Yontav called Yom Kippur, one Yontav called Tuva, which will be celebrated between Shavuos and Rosh Hashanah, hinted to already in our Torah, it's waiting for us. And who will be rewarded, who will be considered the cause for the final re-coronation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, bringing Hashem back to His home, so to speak, to His palace, bringing us all back among with HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Klal Yisrael, who rise to the challenge and conduct themselves as the mother, not the baby who says, Hashem, like I hear many people say when I teach non-religious Jews, I would believe in God if He would do a miracle. God, pick up this book, swing it around the room four times, put it back down on the table, and then I'll believe in you. We're not babies anymore. HaKadosh Baruch Hu did that already for 1,000 years. There was a Har Sinai, there was a splitting of the Yam Suf. We're past that. And it doesn't mean that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has abandoned us, that we don't see His open miracles. It means HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given us the authority, the responsibility, and He trusts Klal Yisrael that we will succeed. We will do it. And you want to know the truth? We are. Not everybody, but the core, especially the courageous Jews who live in Eretz Yisrael and wouldn't think of leaving and are having big families and learning Torah and wouldn't even dream of abandoning Eretz Yisrael with all the tzaras. That's the core. We all, I believe, stand humbly before them. We all know what they're doing. And that core of Klal Yisrael is very strong. And they recognize, they're not waiting for Nisim. They're not waiting for HaKadosh Baruch Hu to break open the heavens. They understand they have to sacrifice. They understand they're going to give up their lives often, lose their children. They see that. But that's what they do. We all have mishpacha there who've done that, I assume. I know I do. And that's what they do. They know it's their job. They know they have to keep pushing. We have to keep pushing. We have to keep learning, passing it on to our children, keeping the mitzvahs, and merit, hopefully, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's return. And we hope that this period of the 3 weeks that we are in the middle of, culminating in Tisha B'Av, this Tisha B'Av will not be the tragic Tisha B'Av, but maybe the joyous Tisha B'Av of the future. But the point is that it really is up to us. It's not Hashem. Hashem is not going to do it for us. That's for sure. That we know. So as long as we know that, we take the ball in our court, we strengthen ourselves like our ancestors did over and over again, we keep trying, and we wait patiently. That's also a difficult midah and a big avoda, and hope that in our day, my grandfather always used to say, when we ask for Mashiach b'mehira b'yameinu, we say it quickly in our day. You know, we only live 70, 80 years, so your life is a billion years, so quickly could be, I don't know, 100 million years. But we only live 80 years, so quickly in our time frame, not in your time frame. We should have b'mehira b'yameinu, we should see the Binyan Beis HaMikdash.
Just a nudge, I really, in the...